Thank you. Sarah Tzipora Bat Shalom Yehuda Edelman was a beautiful, intelligent, loving, caring, and capable woman. She was bubbly, vivacious, gregarious, and greeted everyone with an infectious smile. She excelled in school and in the workplace and connected with her fellow students, employers, and colleagues. Everyone who knew her recognized her strong personality, her contagious laughter, her loyalty to friends, coworkers, and family, her work ethic, and fun-loving nature. We love Sarah very, very much. We will miss her every day for the rest of our lives. We are doing our best to preserve her memory in other ways as well. The Sarah Edelman Memorial Fund is a 501c3 organization designed to help Orthodox children in the St. Louis area in need of counseling, to increase awareness of depression, and to help everyone recognize the warning signs of suicide. We also use some of the funds to help local families defray the costs of their weddings. Thank you to all the donors of the fund. The program that's on the seats lists all of their names. If I've forgotten anyone, please forgive me. There was a critical need for counseling services this year. With your contributions, we hope to be able to provide counseling for an increasing number of children in our community in the next year. We have also helped fund several community weddings. Thank you also to David Markowitz, who again provided the sound system, to Barbara Strachan and Linda Markowitz for their assistance this evening. Thank you all for coming. Your financial support of the fund, as well as your love and support of our family, helps keep us going. Now I would like to introduce Mrs. Eliza Bulow. Eliza is the director of Ner Le'elef's North American Women's Program and the senior educator at the Jewish Experience in Denver, Colorado. A Jewish educator for over 30 years, she mentors leaders who work in Jewish education and outreach through North America. In addition, she travels frequently to offer guidance, leadership training, and strategic planning for Jewish outreach organizations and Jewish communities across the continent. More information is available on her website, abiteoftorah.com. Please silence your cell phones. Mrs. Bulow's topic today is Crossing the Narrow Bridge, Growing Through Life's Challenges. Mrs. Bulow. Thank you.
Hello, good evening. I'm going to be tethered unless I try to take this off. Let me try that. Okay, good. See if I could do these two together. Okay. Thank you so much to the Edelmans for bringing me in. It's so nice to experience different cities and meet different people, and I hope that we can all remember their daughter, Sarah, and elevate her memory and all of the work that we're doing together as a community to grow and help other people grow. And Bezrat Hashem, that's what we'll do now. It's a special time in the 9 days where we're really, it's interesting to think about how mourning starts with one horrible day and then a difficult week and then a month and then a year. And for Tisha B'Av, it goes backwards, right? We start with the 3 weeks, so we have like the Shloshim, it starts with Shloshim and then goes into Shiva, and then we have the one horrible day coming up. So really, we're in the days of Shiva right now, in hard days of mourning, trying to bring ourselves to that position where we could really feel the loss. But we can really look at the loss that we're feeling right now with the dissonance that we have between us and our values, between us and what we hope the world should be. That's really what it is to live in Gullus, to live in Galut. Even though we have our beautiful air-conditioned homes and yummy food and plenty of it and wonderful friends and great health care and all the things that we have, we could complain for a long time, but we have a long list of things to be so thankful for. And yet, things aren't working the way that we know they could if only we work together, if only we took care of each other. I think about it, you know, we're 14 million Jews on the planet. 14 million is a number that you could count to, and it wouldn't take all week. That's all we are, 14 million. And we write each other off in large groups. So here's a chance to bring us together and to think about who else we could bring into our embrace, which other Jews we could embrace as we're moving forward. Those who are difficult, those who are not so easy to be around, those who are easy to be around, but observe differently, whatever it is, there's a lot of embracing that we can do. And Bezrat Hashem, we should do that and bring ourselves together so that the 40 million all count together. Okay, so I want to talk about growing through life's challenges. So I've been blessed with a lot of challenges. And I really feel like at this point I have been blessed with them. So I'm an 11th generation American, and so my family goes back very far, and that's a whole different story. But I'll just start with some challenges that I faced as a young girl and how I grew through some of them, although I didn't see it at the time. I was definitely bullied a lot in school. A lot. I went to inner city schools, but I was a professor's kid with a good vocabulary, and it was not easy to be me in the schools that my parents felt very strongly that I should attend. I didn't get to go to private schools like the other professors' daughters did, and my parents believed very strongly in living in integrated neighborhoods, and I went to the local public school, and it was not easy. So after years of that, years of being bullied, we did take a trip around the country when I was 10, a Ford Foundation-funded field study of interracial neighborhoods and desegregated housing in 1974. And when we came back from that, I was in sixth grade then, in seventh grade, the bullying started again. So I was sitting in a seat and I had made incorrect eye contact with somebody I shouldn't have looked at that way, apparently. And she came over to me. I was sitting and she came over to me and she said, "Stand up." So I stood up. And then she looked me right in the face. She said, "Now sit down." And I didn't sit down. And she looked at me strong. She said, "I said, sit down." And I didn't sit down. And it ended the spell. And beginning in seventh grade, the bullying was over. It was still not the easiest, but I made it through seventh. And then we moved to Oregon in eighth. And other quests began. So in ninth, I went to a high school for kids of for performing arts, a public high school, performing arts. I took ballet and musical theater. And after 2 years, my parents got divorced, a nice divorce in Rochester, New York. And it was a nice divorce, really, a very nice divorce, actually, the nicest one I ever saw. I didn't even understand why people would say that kids from broken homes have a hard time, because I was thinking, this is not hard at all. Like, what's hard about divorce? I didn't realize until I grew up and met other people who got divorced how difficult divorce could be. They had a very smooth divorce. Nevertheless, then my father got remarried. That was hard because I was the woman of the house. And all of a sudden there was a new woman of the house because I lived with my father after they got divorced. And she usurped me. She just died last summer and now I have my father back. Which is interesting after 39 years, really. It's fascinating to see the shift in relationship. Anyway, so in my ballet classes, I'll tell you a story about that. But in high school, I converted to Judaism, different story. But I had my bat mitzvah at 16. So I'm coming home from preparing for my bat mitzvah, and I had a gift with me. I took the bus. It was across town, two big, long bus rides away, because we lived not where the Jews lived. But I had gotten as a gift a big Webster's dictionary. And it was large and unwieldy, and I was taking it home on the bus. And the bus was full, but it was a long bus ride. I decided to sit down. So I sat down on the floor in front of somebody who didn't appreciate the fact that I brushed against his pant leg. So he started up. He yelled at me, and he really lit into me, but I was already like, I had passed the bullying stage, and I wasn't going to let him do that. I had just watched an episode of Mork and Mindy where Mork complimented somebody instead of who was about to fight him. And as soon as the guy was about to swing a punch, he said, your eyes are so beautiful, those blue eyes. And he was disarmed. And then he gets ready to punch him again. He said, and your hair, how did you get a haircut like that? It's really becoming. So I thought, I'm going to try this technique. The guy's like, I was petrified. He's yelling at me like crazy on the bus. And I looked at him calmly. And I said, God bless you. And he was so shocked. He said, God bless you too, B. He used the whole word. But I grew through that too. I got off the next stop. But anyway, so I passed some of those tests, but really, what is a test? In thinking about a test and what it is, the challenges that we have, off I went to Israel. I became Jewish. Off I went to Israel, studied in Bravenders for 2 years, served in the army for 2 years. I had lots of interesting experiences there. Again, another time, lots of other stories. You can find stories on my website if you want. other talks, all my talks are free on the website. But I continued to grow and met my husband in Israel, even though I was a very clear, here's an example of a test, right? We plan, God laughs, right? So I know I'm 19, right? I had already converted, I had already had my bat mitzvah, I had already served in the army, or I was in the army, and I'm 19, ready to get married, of course, which every girl is at age 19. and I had my list of what I'm looking for in a marriage partner. Right? So, some of the things I was looking for were negatives. One of the negatives was, doesn't speak English. Even as a second language. Because there was no chance I was ever leaving Israel. Not me. I was very Zionistic and I was staying there forever. So, and somewhere in America was a young man who on his list was Yiddish-speaking European parents. See what God does that way? Yeah. As my kids would say, it's so Hashem to match us up like that. So it was so Hashem. We met each other, and now that's why I'm here. Anyway, moved back to the States. I finished Hunter College. He finished Cardozo Law School. We got married, moved to Long Island. In Long Island, I lived in a building with all older Jews. All of them were in their 80s. All of them were Jews. It was the building that my husband's grandparents lived in. They both passed away in that apartment, and we moved in. So we were in our 20s, all my neighbors in their 80s. And I was pals with all of them. I had a great time. And that was the beginning of my real Kiruv career, because none of them were observant. But the beginning of the year comes, it's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, I bring a lulav around to everybody to shake. And one lady who was raised in Providence, Rhode Island, said, I remember this, right? You give a quarter and you get to shake it. I said, actually, you could shake it for free. You don't have to give a quarter for this. And then I made a Seder for everybody on the floor. Everybody came, and one woman told me after the Seder, it was an amazing Seder, everybody on the whole floor, 14 apartments, everybody came. And I made the Seder. My husband said, you got us into this, you're leading this, I'm not doing this, this is your thing. So I led the Seder too. But I went around the table and everybody read in the language of their choice as we went around the table. And afterwards, one of the women on the floor said, I'm married for 50 years. My husband didn't want to come because he couldn't find a yarmulke. And he was too embarrassed to come to your house without a yarmulke. Finally, I found one, and he agreed he would come. I told him, you can't let Aliza down. You have to go. So he came. He said, but we're married for 50 years. I didn't know he could read Hebrew. He read his paragraph in Hebrew. And she didn't even know he could do it. That was the kind of life that they were living. Well, the tests started then. I had my first child, fantastic, raised in the 70s. I knew for a fact that boys and girls are absolutely 100% identical, right? It's all a matter of nurture, has nothing to do with nature, right? Then, 16 months later, I had a boy. I find out it's actually nature that makes a difference between girls and boys. My boy was so different than my daughter. And he was wild and crazy, all over the place, a ball of energy, all the time, tearing things apart, all over the place. He filled the entire two-bedroom apartment. I was constantly getting calls from the neighbors downstairs, keep him quiet, keep him quiet, keep him quiet. Oh, I didn't know what to do with this wild and crazy child. At that time, I was learning with Rebbetzin Tehila Yeager. And I finally decided, I've got to get advice. What is going on with this child? So I discussed with her, I have this daughter, I have this son, and she had seen them. I took them to the shiur sometimes, which she gave. And she said, it's a test. Okay, it's a test. Now I know it's a test. My father comes to visit, and he sees this wild and crazy child. He says, what is going on with this child of yours? I said, it's a test. He said, well, what do you get if you pass the test? I said, I don't know. Better go find out. What do you get if you pass the test? So I went back to my rabbits and I said, what do you get if you pass the test? And that's when I started to really learn, like, about tests. Nothing! You get nothing if you pass the test, because there's no such thing as passing it. But you do get something if you pass the test. There's no such thing as passing it. There's moving through it. What do you get if you pass the test? You get you. Bigger and stronger and smarter and more compassionate and more capable than you were yesterday, or the day before, or the day before, or the day before if it's a long test, and it was a long one. So I had him, and then twins. Okay, now, this is how much energy he took. It was the 4-year-old daughter, the 3-year-old, and the baby twins. So if we would divide up the work, one was going shopping, one was staying home, you could either take the 4-year-old and the twins or the 3-year-old. It was equal work. So I started to work on, okay, it's not about tests. I evolved my understanding. It's about custom-designed workshops. It's about God designing workshops for us at our level. Hashem knows us best, and he designs workshops to bring the best out of us. And sometimes he invites us into the workshop and opens the door and says, would you like to join me in this graduate-level workshop called ADHD and Wild and Crazy Childness? Sometimes you look inside the door and say, no, thank you. And Hashem says, guess what? You're in! And in you go! And that's all you get, that amount of warning. And in the workshop you are. Okay, so now I had needed to develop new tools. Now I'm understanding. I'm in a workshop. But let me tell you, this was a hard workshop. I had a lot of tools that I needed to develop. How do you cope? How did I grow? How will I grow through this? And I realized that's my second question to ask. My first question is, whatever challenge I face, how will I go through this? And the second question is, how will I grow through this? Because that's why I signed up for this program in the first place, right? That's why I became Jewish. How will I grow through this? That's what I wanted. How will I achieve meaning? How will I connect my life to what's worthwhile living for? How will I do that? How will my everyday, you know, when I first became Jewish, I wanted to be a rabbi. When I got to Israel, I found out I'm too religious to be a rabbi. So... But why did I want to be a rabbi? Really, coming from a Christian perspective, the most religious you could be, if you're a Christian, is clergy. That's not the case in Judaism. You can be very religious and not be clergy in Judaism. A person can have a completely, every breath of their life, every step that they take, life informed by religion, by connection with Hashem, and not be a clergy person. I didn't understand that paradigm at first. But I learned that as I grew, and I learned that I better get more connected if I'm going to be able to raise this family of this child that was really pushing me. And then the twins, and then the older one, who turned out was a perfect peach, still is. Her most challenging moment, I think, was when she was 17. She had studied carefully my parenting methods. And at 17, she came into the house and said, Ima, could I borrow the car now or in an hour? Right? That's how you're supposed to get your little kids dressed. Do you want to wear the red shirt or the blue shirt? Not do you want to get dressed. You give a choice of two choices that work for you, right? So that was her question. I'm like, no, that's not how you ask your mother. May I borrow the car? When might it be convenient for you? Anyway, that was her moment of chutzpah. Yeah. But the other ones. So that was the one Hashem tricked me with. He totally said, I'm going to give her this one first. And then see if she wants a bunch. So he said, see this cute little girl? Do you want a lot of these? And I said, oh, yes. Yes, I do. I do. And I quickly had 6. And none of them were like that. In fact, later on, when they were older, and I had, you know, they kept pushing me after 6. You know, as they got older, they wanted more. My husband was very clear 6 was good. My parents were very clear that 2 was good. I was definitely raised in the era of zero population growth, so pushing past 2 was a thing. But 6 was nice. But as I mentioned to my youngest daughter, my youngest was a son, but my youngest daughter one day said to me, she said, Ima, if you would have had seven, I mean, she said, look at us. Each one of us is more difficult than the last. Imagine what a seventh would be like. So, yeah, I think Hashem also agreed that that might be enough testing. Anyway, so I worked on developing some more tools. Okay, so here are some tools that I developed to be able to get through and grow through these challenges. So here's the one that, if you want to remember one tool, there's a lot of tools to remember, but one is skip step two. And I actually got to practice it on the plane today. All right, so step one, something bad happens. Step two, you get upset about it. Blame, shame, drama, whatever it is. Step three, you take care of the problem. Right, so today I'm on the plane, I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to speak about today and how am I going to organize this talk? I have a lot of things I want to say, I want to make sure it's in the right order. And I'm thinking about, you know, I look at my ticket, when am I going to land, and I just notice the next day, I'm going home, it's Erev Tisha B'Av, and then I'm going to Chicago. Wait a second, where is my flight to Chicago on my phone? Why isn't it there? So I go to the next day. Oh my gosh, it's on Thursday, not on Wednesday. I'm supposed to be going on Wednesday. I bought my ticket Erev Shabbos, which is more than 24 hours, which means my ticket's bought already. But I bought it right Erev Shabbos because it was a quick trip to Chicago. And I bought it for Thursday, coming back Friday night. So first I was mad at myself. Oh, you're so ridiculous. I can't believe it. You didn't follow your own rule, that you didn't like read your reservation out loud. That's your rule for yourself. Read it out loud if you would have read it out loud. And I thought, oh, I'm in step two. No blaming and shaming. I'm just going to go straight to step three. Step three is where you take care of the problem. It's going to cost me money, or it's not going to cost me money. I'm going to rearrange it, and I don't have to blame and shame myself. That's all, and that works for yourself, and it works for others. You just skip that step, right? The milk spills, and step two is, how many times do I have to tell you not to put the cup at the edge of the counter, right? And then you clean it up. Why have spilled milk and a damaged relationship? Why not just clean it up, right? So that's something I work on, skipping step two. It works great in big things and small things. So I started working on that with my family. Skip step two. It doesn't mean you don't educate, right? That was another one of my mantras. I developed a bunch of mantras for parenting. Skip step two was one of them. The other was educate, don't berate, right? So I'm not going to berate my children. I'm just going to educate. When you put the glass of milk on the edge of the counter, it's more likely to spill. Please go get a shmata and clean up the mess, right? So that's both. Educate, don't berate, and skip step two right there. So I'm working on that, skipped step two, and I'm working on developing my Ein Tova, right? Looking at things with a good eye. And it's a choice. We could look at things with either eye, an Ein Hara or an Ein Tova. It's totally up to us what we want to focus on. So I decided I'm going to start focusing on the good, looking for what I want. So it's easy to say that, but you definitely have to practice it. And I had to catch myself a lot, focusing on what's good. And I realized a lot of times what I'm focusing on that's bad is either step two in advance, before step one even happened, right? That happens. Sometimes we're in step two before step one even happens. Or really it's your imagination, what you're imagining. Imagine for a minute you're on a deserted island. It's you alone. And the island is filled with man-eating monsters, and they're very hungry. You have no weapons at your disposal, no one to call for help. What should you do? Stop imagining. So many times what we're dealing with is our own imagination, right? I can't believe she didn't even look at me. She must think she's all that in a bag of chips that she couldn't even say thank you for the kiddush that I just made, right? We're totally imagining this scenario, living completely inside our own imagination, and we could choose to imagine something else. She must have been distracted. Whatever it is, but it's our imagination. We can make choices about what we imagine. Once we realize, and you might say to yourself, well, I know that woman. I know how she looks through people. Maybe you do, but you know what? The Chafetz Chaim teaches us that imagination was given to us for the sake of trying to figure out how you could imagine nice things about people. For dan l'chaf sechut, for giving somebody the benefit of the doubt. You have to imagine it. What could it be? What could that benefit possibly be? But we could use our imagination, even if we have to twist ourselves into pretzels, and you know what? We live a happier life. Why should we live a life of a bunch of mean people all the way around us? And most of the meanness is inside of us, not inside of them. We could choose to make them all nice. And then we live with nice people all the way around us. It's totally up to us. So I worked on that too with my kids, and I realized they don't have malicious intent. They're not trying to destroy my life. They're not trying to mess things up. Occasionally they were trying. I had one Erev Pesach. So, okay, I had this hyperactive kid, then I had the twins. Okay, so the twins, one was fluffy and a girl and a boy. Girl, fluffy, happy, shiny, constantly helpful, nice. The boy, sour and difficult. One day, I sent them to the same school when they were four. One day, they got off the school bus, and she runs into the house. She says, look what I made, look what I made, look what I made. And it was an 11 by 17 piece of paper that she had painted. All the paint was clear and clean. A little circle of yellow. On top of that was clearly a wash brush green, pink, right? Everything separate, lots of white space, clean brushes, the whole thing. He comes into the house, he says, want to see something scary? Look! And it was a storm cloud. The entire page was covered. Just blacks and greens and browns and not a speck of white space anywhere. Yeah, so now I'm trying to raise this one. And so, okay, now it's Erev Pesach. And I have a few people in help, and you know, it's a bigger family, and I've got six kids, and guests coming, and all of a sudden they see with my Pesach cutting boards, our challah board is in the middle of it. And I about have a spaz attack right there. Right? I'm working on skip step two, not working in that case. I'm like, I can't, and I look at my cleaning, like, I'm like, a whole month we're working on getting crumbs out of the house. How is it the challah boards with the cutting boards? Anyway, I pull myself together. And this child wants to go get ice pops. And I say, no, you're not getting ice pops. And he says, you better let me go get ice pops. And we're not doing that now. We're not going. He says, Ima, you don't let me get ice pops, I'm going to take some money, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to buy a loaf of bread, I'm going to make it into crumbs, and I'm going to sprinkle them all over the house! I am going to kill you is what I'm going to do. Go to your room forever! So I actually used to like, did anybody ever read Where the Wild Things Are, the Max Sendex book? Yeah. So I love that book because in the end, the dinner that the mother brings him is still hot. For me, it was redemptive because the mother still loves the kid that was so wild, right? I just love the fact that the dinner was still hot. I'm like, yes, I could be a mom like that. That even though I sent my kid to the room, and even though he was wild, and even though he went out of a wild fantasy with crazy things, the mother could still give him a hot dinner. I could be a mother like that. So, okay, so now I'm working on really trusting that Hashem gave me each one of these children for what I need, for my best growth. And I learned in Psalm 23, Shiftecha mishantecha heme yenachamuni, thy rod and thy staff both comfort me. What does that mean? I'm pretty sure I learned this from Tehila Yeager. And the shepherd has one stick. And that stick is both a rod and a staff. The staff helps you up the hill. And the rod whaps the sheep back into place. Right? One stick does two things. On the one hand, it's a support. And then the other hand, it's a get back into line machine. Right? So that's what the shepherd does. He whaps the sheep back into line. But they're both a comfort. The comfort is that God's engaged with us, whether he's supporting us or giving us a patch to get us back in line. It's both Hashem's engagement with us. Okay, that wasn't such a comforting thought, but then I thought back to my ballet class in high school. So it was a pretty serious high school for performing arts. And we had a French, extremely full of herself, ballet teacher. And she walked around with a stick that was a whapper. That's what it was for. And, you know, you'd be standing at the bar, and if your elbow sags a little bit, she'd whap your elbow up. Or if your wrist is down too much, she'd whap your wrist. If your shoulders are up too much, she'd whap your shoulders down. If your tush is out too much, she'd whap your tush in. All right, whatever it is, she was like, she would walk around and whap people with her stick. That's what it was for. So one day, we had a relatively new student in the class, and the teacher was all over her. Whap, 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 until the student starts to cry. And so the ballet teacher, with a grand swish of her stick, stops the live music. We had a live pianist in the class. Stops the music. And she said, "Why are you crying?" I said, "Well, you're correcting me so much, and you keep hitting me, and I'm new in the class, and it's just so hard, and I can't remember everything, and you keep hitting me." She said, "Don't you cry when I correct you. I correct you because I see potential. You cry the day I stop." And she started the music again. Okay, so with that story, I understood that phrase in the psalm. Right? You only correct if you see potential. It might hurt, but the whole point of the test is, I see more inside of you. And I want it. Come give it to me. Give it to me. You could do more than that. Come on, walk towards me. So I started to see tests really as Hashem in front of me, like a loving father teaching a child to walk. Where a child's not steady on their feet, they're going to fall, they're going to get hurt. But Hashem is saying, come on, there's more. Come on, you could do it. Come on, come on. Even if you lose your balance, Hashem is saying, I see it in you, and I want to get it out of you. Come on, let's bring that potential into fruition. You could do it. And that's what the test is for. It's not a pass-fail kind of a thing. It's a, how could I get you to grow more? Do more. I want more out of you. Okay, so now that brings us to the very narrow bridge that we're all on. What is a bridge? Why is there that song? Kol ha'olam kulo gesher tzar ma'od va'ikar lo lefached. What is that? The whole world's a very narrow bridge. You know about the sage. He's dying in his bed, and he's surrounded by all of his disciples. And they say to him, Master, please, before you go, give us one last bit of your wisdom. And he says, life is like a river. And so the disciples eagerly pass that back. Life is like a river. Life is like a river. Through his bedroom, out into the hall, out into the dining room, into the street where everybody's waiting. Life is like a river. Finally, somebody on the street says, what does that mean, life is like a river? So they pass it back. What does that mean? What does that mean, life is like a river? What does that mean, life is like... All the way back up to the ears of the sage himself. They say, Master, please tell us, what does that mean, life is like a river? And he says, so it's not like a river. What does that mean, and the whole world is a narrow bridge? What is that supposed to mean, the whole world is a narrow bridge? What is that? What does a bridge do? What's the function of a bridge? You cross the bridge from one domain to another domain. Where are we crossing? What is this world crossing? It's crossing the world of souls to the world of souls. Right? We know that we're a soul before we're born. And then we are dipped into a body of approximately 40 days. That's what our sages tell us, that ensoulment happens. Right? So 40 days after conception, the soul goes into the body. And then there's different stages, actually, of full engagement into the body. It takes, actually, up to 20 years for the soul to be fully in different stages. But the soul goes deeply into the body, and at 20 years, solidly set, that's Bar Onchim. That's when the soul and the body are completely one there. So it goes into the body, you wear that soul for however long you get. 2 weeks, 20 years, 50 years, 90 years, 120 years, however long we get, and then we leave the body behind. And the soul continues. So for a soul before we're born, and we're a soul after we die, what is the point of coming into this world? Anybody ever wonder? Why are we here? It's not tikkun, and it's not keeping Torah and mitzvos. It's dvekas. It's connecting to Hashem. It's receiving Hashem's goodness. That's why we're here. Who is living a life of receiving Hashem's goodness all day long, every day? Raise your hand. Good. That's good. That's good. Who has pleasure all day long, every day? Because that's really the purpose of creation, right? Okay, not too many. So either it's a flaw in creation, or there's something we have to figure out here. All right, so we come into this world, really, where souls can't do anything on their own. But Hashem made creatures to be able to receive Hashem, receive what Hashem wants to give. But Hashem wants to, the way that Hashem can give it is through relationship. We have to be able to be in relationship with Hashem. Souls can't be in relationship by themselves. They're static things. You put a soul into a body and it becomes a dynamic thing. You create a world of choice and there's a dynamic environment in which the soul can then become transformed. And at the end of the pathway, when the soul leaves the body, it is what it's achieved through its partnership with the body, through its interaction in the world. That's why we're here, to have a body, to interact in the world, so that we can have free will, so that we can choose to be in relationship with Hashem. A relationship's about choice. So we have to be able to choose it, and we have to be able to choose out of it, if it's a meaningful choice to choose into it. Unlike angels, unlike animals, they can't choose. We're the only ones with choice. So we're put into this world to choose. So Hashem gives us lots of different scenarios. Choose, 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 choose life. Let me tell you how to do it. I'm going to give you a book. I'm going to teach you the whole shebang. How do you figure out how to grow your soul in this world? You want to know? Look in the book. The book has lots of pathways. There's do pathways and don't pathways. Right? All the do pathways are grow your soul this way. All the don't pathways are don't diminish your soul this way. That's the whole Torah in a nutshell, right? If you want to grow your soul, do this stuff. If you don't want to hurt your soul, skip that stuff. That's the whole thing, right? That's all you have to know. Do this stuff, skip that stuff, and now Hashem's going to throw in some obstacle courses to make it a little bit more interesting and to make it a little bit harder and to give you opportunity to grow more. That's what this world is about. How can you grow more? But it's scary. It's scary when you get a kid that's mentally ill, as I had. That was number three son, right? So number three son, who was suicidal from age five, right? It's scary, and it pulls more out of you and says, give me more. You think you learned something with an ADD child? You think you learned something with an angry child, a petulant child? Now let's try a child with bipolar disorder. Let's see how that goes for you, right? So it could seem like it's mean, or it could seem like, and this is how I really worked on seeing it, like Hashem says, I want more out of you. Come, give me more. Okay, so now I need deeper tools, right? This is not, I can't just do the Ayin Tova thing, right? And I can't just do the skip step two, although skip step two really helped a lot, even with that. I'll tell you one thing he told me one day. He had Asperger's also, loved the computer. The computer was his thing. A lot of people with Asperger's have something that's their main thing. It could be train schedules. It could be sports. It could be whatever little minutia, and they know everything about it. His was computers. He knew everything about computers. Loved computers, bricked our computers, went through our computers, took them apart, put them back together with most of the screws, and sometimes they worked again until they worked much better, until he was able to give tech advice. All he needed was an Indian accent, and he could have been hired for life. So In eighth grade, he was online too much. You know, he had limited time, and he wanted to be online. He was and it was all about learning different things. He was watching YouTube videos of how to take things apart and how to put them back together and how to make different programs work and software development, and he was in it big time. And he was a child, so he had to go to sleep. So I, you know, had the limits, and so he went to bed at the right time. And he'd get up in the middle of the night and be on the computer from 2 to 4. I'm a mother, though, so I have mother ears, and I could hear him. And I would come downstairs. You have to get back to bed. You're not allowed to be up. You can't get up. You can't. There's a certain amount of rules. There's a certain amount of time. You can't be on the computer now. Fine, he breaks all the rules. I tell him, look, you break the rules again, and it's a week of no internet. I'll cut it off from the house. He breaks the rules again, cut off the internet. Now he's sobbing to me, Ima, you don't understand. I have to have the internet. It's how I manage my depression. I'm like, oh, you're just going to have to figure out another way to manage your depression. There's no internet this week. Ima, you don't understand. It's learning how to do computers. It's the air that I breathe. I said, okay, you're just going to have to hold your breath for the week because there's no internet this week. He said, Ima, you don't understand. You taking away the internet from me is like you dying and finding out that Jesus is right. That's what he said to me. Yes, he still couldn't have it. I'm stronger than that. Okay, so now I'm working on developing more. Okay, what tools will I develop for this? So I was graced. I daven before I teach. I learn and I daven before I teach. And it happened to be that I was in a high school program, and I don't like teaching high school kids. Way too young for me, even college. I love adults. Adults are my favorite people to work with because adults have imagination, they have experience, they have depth. I love teaching adults. High school, way too young. But this person that I take care of Rebbetzins all across the country, and she's running a high school program. Can I please come in? Will I please say a few words? What am I going to say to high school kids? They're way too young for me. Anyway, though, I got a bracha, and I thought of there are public high school kids, and half of them weren't Jewish, actually, at this JSU, Jewish Student Union, Jewish High School Club of half Jews and half non-Jews. What am I going to say to half Jews and half non-Jews that's inspiring to the Jews and not offensive to the non-Jews that will help the Jews feel like they're more Jewish? So I talked about Jewish identity. And I really worked at this since I got this chap in that moment. There's four names of the Jews, or the four names that are most commonly used in the Torah, and one's not common actually, are Ivri, Hebrew, or the Hebrews, or the Jews, Yehudim, or the Israelites, B'nai Yisrael, the children of Israel, and Yeshurun. Those are our four names, right? So what do these four names mean? Yeshurun was my addition a little bit later on as I was learning more, but just the first three. All right, so Ivri, the first one is, Avraham and Sarah, the name comes from Avraham and Sarah, came from the other side of the river, and so we're forever called the other siders. Why? Because of the geographic location from which Avraham and Sarah come? No. Because we stand on the other side of world opinion. Because we are other siders. Because we see everything that's going on around us, and we're able to stand alone in opposition to that. So the first thing you need to know as a Jew is that we're not that. There's more things to know, but you have to know, first know who you're not. Then comes Yehudi, right? That's the next name in the order of the names, and that comes from the fourth son of Leah. Yaakov knows prophetically he's going to have 12 sons. He has four wives. 12 divided by 4 is 3. Each wife should have 3. Rachel doesn't have any. Leah has the first one, and she names, and Leah's not feeling so hot because of the whole switcheroo. Right, so the first one she names after her pain, Reuven, because God, Reu, Ra'e, sees my pain. Then she has another one, Shimon, Shema, because God hears my pain. Levi, which means accompany, because God accompanies me in my pain. Okay, these are all very downer names describing her state, right? And then she has an extra. She conceives again, a fourth. And she has done the math, and she knows 4 is more than she's supposed to get. And she says, "Oh, hapam odat Hashem. This time I'm going to thank Hashem. I'll name him Thank You, Yehuda." And we're called the Yehudim. Really, it shouldn't be that we're the Jews, we're the thinkers. Thinkers and admitters, that's who we are. We admit that God runs the world, we're thankful that he does. Imagine if we did. Right? You know the difference between God and a Jew? God knows everything. And a Jew knows better. Right? One day I'm davening to Hashem. I'm discussing the whole Iran situation with him. And I tell Hashem, "Look, Hashem, here's the problem. The Iranians, they have their nuclear plants in the middle of a mountain. Our best bombs, our bunker buster bombs that we have, can't get into the mountain to destroy their nuclear plant. What are we going to do?" So I said, "Hashem, if you could just make, let's say, a nuclear accident inside the mountain that would cause the entire mountain to collapse, thereby damaging, destroying their entire laboratory and killing all their scientists so that they can't rebuild, I think that would be a good idea." And then I stopped for a minute in the middle of my tefillot and I thought, what am I giving advice to Hashem? Like, I think he's smarter than me. I think he could figure out how to take care of the Iran nuclear program. I don't have to figure out the whole thing. So I changed my tefillah to, "Hashem, you know what to do. Could you please do it?" He just wants to hear our tefillot. He wants to hear our prayers. So I don't have to give him advice. Sometimes I tell him what my vote is. But I trust him to make the right decision. It's his job. Okay. That's admit and thank, right? And the third name, so that's what we stand for. We have to know who we're not. We have to know what we stand for. We stand for admitting that God runs the world and thanking him for doing so. And the third name of the Jews is B'nai Yisrael. We are not the B'nai Avraham. The media wants to call us that. The three Abrahamic faiths. That's not us, right? We don't put ourselves together with the Muslims and the Christians and say that we all share one grandfather, even if we do. Right? That's not, we never call ourselves the B'nai Avraham. We're not the B'nai Yitzchak either. Right? We're the B'nai Yisrael. Why? They're all three are avot. Why aren't we the other ones, the B'nai other ones? We're just the B'nai Yisrael. Because B'nai Yisrael, the Israelites, that's who we stand with. That's the critical mass that's necessary to start a nation. Avraham, one guy with a great idea. Not the first monotheist on the planet, but the first monotheist with a mission. Right? Adam was the first monotheist, but he's the first monotheist with a mission. So, but he didn't change the whole world with his idea, and Yitzhak didn't change the whole world. But the Jews together, that's our job. The B'nai Yisrael, it's our job to change the whole world. So that's who we stand with. Okay, so now I've been working with these identity names and thinking about, okay, when do I stand with, when do I stand apart, when am I a thinker, who am I in this? And I worked with being an Ivri. An Ivri is an other-sider. And this past summer, a year ago, my daughter had a baby who was born healthy and then wasn't. So now this baby is a week in the hospital, 6 weeks old, a week in the hospital, going for a second week in the hospital. So I said, you know, I'm going to fly out. And I'll help with the little girls and that are home and the family with the baby in the hospital. So I get to the hospital, and it's going to be another week in the hospital. So I tell my daughter, you go home for Shabbos. I'll spend Shabbos in the hospital. So in the hospital, I think, I'm an Ivri. I know how to do Ivri. I can be an other sider. I can make Shabbos in a zone around me, where it's Shabbos here, even though nowhere else is it Shabbos in this hospital. But I am an Ivri, and I know how to do. I am a Bat Sarava Avraham. I know how to do Ivri. And I could be an other sider here in this hospital, making Shabbos in my own zone. And then I look back at the crib with this sick baby that they can't figure out what's going on, or they have figured out that it's going very badly, and he's probably not going to survive. And I think, okay, maybe I'm an other sider, like from the other side of the bridge. Maybe that's what Ivri means. Maybe if we're a soul before we're born, and we're a soul after we die, and the after we die is the world of souls, maybe that's the kind of Ivri we really are. We're really other-siders. And we're just passing through here on this very narrow bridge. And if I could feel my place on the other side and know that I'm just here on this bridge temporarily, I could get through this tremendous sorrow of having lost my own child a few years before and now watching a child lose a child. How do you do that? Right? So I am an Ivri. So I was thinking about, okay, I'm on the other side. I'm just here still on the bridge. If you think about, we come from this world of souls, great expansion, our soul, what we are. And then it gets squeezed into a tiny little body where the wholeness of who we are has to be squeezed into this package and then wander through this narrow bridge until it gets released again into the world of souls. Maybe this baby is just a tiny little package and that neshama needs to be here for however long it is, not that long, and it's going to go from world of souls into body, back into world of souls faster than we'd like, but maybe my job is just to be on this bridge and not be scared. It doesn't mean don't look down. You look down and there's an abyss for sure. You could fall off the bridge. But if really the ikar is lo lefached, don't be scared, so then how do you not be scared? So I worked many years in dealing with my son, not being scared, with the end of Adon Olam. Biado of kidruchi, v'yeti shan v'yaira, v'im ruchi g'v'yeti, adosham li v'lo ira. And a lot of times if I would get scared, I would just say, adosham li v'lo ira, v'lo ira, v'lo ira. Because Hashem is with me, I don't have to be scared. Right? I'll translate the verse in case you're not familiar with it. But in his hands I place, biado of kidruchi, in his hands I place my soul. And with my soul, my body too. When I go to sleep and when I wake up, Hashem is with me, I don't have to be scared. Doesn't mean bitter things won't happen. It doesn't mean everything is going to turn out okay. It just means nothing truly bad can happen because Hashem runs the world. It could feel bad, but in the end it's not going to be bad. Now I'll quote, whether it's John Lennon or the great Marigold Hotel, it still is a Jewish idea. I tried to find the source of the quote, right? It's all going to be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, it's not yet the end, right? This is a Jewish idea. It's all going to be all right in the end. And if it's not all right, it's not yet the end. It doesn't mean we're going to see the end necessarily in our life. But it does mean we're going to see the end. It is going to come out all right in the end. There's not a question about that. Because Hashem made that promise. We're all going to survive, the Jewish people, not individuals, but as a people, we will survive. We're all here. But we're in a broken place. So then I thought about, oh my gosh, look what's going on here. We have wholeness in the world of souls to difficulty and brokenness on the bridge to wholeness in the world of souls. And I thought about the Shema. I heard it in the Shema. Right? So in the Shema we say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We should know that Hashem of Rachamim, the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei that signifies kindness and warmth, and the Elohim that sounds like a plural, which is the first way that we encounter Hashem in the Torah. When it says, Breshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim v'et-ha-aretz, in the beginning, the Hashem's? What? How could it be that there's a plural name the first time we hear of God when our whole job as Jews is to unify God's name in the world? We're supposed to be the ones who live one and bring the message of one God, one, one, one. And that name is broken up. Elohim, multiplicity, right? And that's the first one that we see, but we know we have to unite it all into Hashem Echad in the end, right? So we have Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. It's all one. What seems like it's dissonant, the Hashem of kindness and the Hashem of judgment, it's all one Hashem. So I thought that's kind of like the narrow bridge right there. You have whole, broken, whole, or whole, or warm, difficult, warm, right? So it's there. And then on Rosh Hashanah, I heard it in the shofar blasts, right? You hear Tekia Shvarim, Tekia, Tekia Trua, Tekia, whole, broken, whole, whole, broken, whole, until you get to whole, broken, Tekia Gedola, big whole, or huge wholeness in today's parlance, right? Bigly. It's the big whole at the end, right? Where we really arrive at our destination, where we go to total expansion. So I thought about, okay, if I'm an actual Ivri, don't go. I have one whole more minute, you guys who are davening in 1 minute. So I realized that's where we are. We're on this narrow bridge, living in brokenness. But there's wholeness ahead. And that's what we need to do, is understand with trust. I could put myself in Hashem's hands and move forward, so to speak, and move forward with trust that there's wholeness ahead. All I have to do is my best. That's it. I do not have to fix it. I don't have to make it whole. It's not my job, right? As it says, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, v'lo ata ben chorin li batel mimena. You don't have to finish the job, but you can't stop trying. All you have to do, though, is your best. That's it. It's the whole thing. You don't have to make it perfect. Not every kid has to come out perfect. Not every situation has to be brilliant. But you just keep on plugging along, doing your part to unite the brokenness into wholeness. We need Hashem's help to make that happen. But it's our job to do our very best, and then that's all we have to do. Then we can release the physical and move into the spiritual. So that's our job. We're living in a broken world, heading towards wholeness. What broke apart the Beit HaMikdash was machloket, right? Was chelek. Do you ever think about the root of machloket, of argument, of sinat chinam, arguing with each other, is chelek, broken parts. Chelek, chelek, chelek. Peace, peace, peace. Right? And what we want, instead of peace, 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 is peace. Shalom. Shleimut. Right? The root of shalom is shalem. We want wholeness. So we want to go from brokenness to wholeness. And that's the direction that we walk. It's not necessarily the destination that we achieve, but the direction that we walk. So, especially for the men who are leaving, I want to bless us all that we should use this time to walk through the broken parts, take all the challenges that we have, and move through them with trust and the knowledge. It's not our job to fix it all, but it's our job to walk towards the wholeness. And if it's not all right, it's not the end, but it's going to be all right in the end. We can do it. We can bring ourselves there individually, but it's really a collective process of multiple generations. And we all have the merit to be a piece of that and to bring our generations forward. So we should be zocha to see the ultimate redemption very quickly. May we all have a fellatio gatish above and celebrate this year. All right, the men are released to go pray, put in a good word for us, and the women are certainly welcome to stay. Come over here. We could chat, have questions. We'll wait just a minute until the men go. Men can stay if they want. No judgment about if you've davened yet or not, or will be davening. Hi. Should we make it a public questions or private conversation or? Yeah, hi. Okay, I'm going to be right here. Anybody who wants to come is welcome to come.